Welcome to the Permaculture Pimp Cast with your host, the Permaculture Pimp Daddy and the Pasture Raised Pimp. Get your recommended daily allowance of permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. Tip a pimp. Stay alert, stay alive. Permaculture is my passion. Welcome to episode 134 of the Permaculture Pimp Cast, where PIMP stands for Permaculture is my passion. The only pimp cast on planet Earth where we discuss permaculture, preparedness, and practical living. How you doing, son?
Pretty good. How are you?
This is good. I am good. Everything's good. This episode is good because it's brought to you by Hickory Ridge Soap from twooldcrowshomestead.com.
Turn that simp into a pimp.
Bam! Heaven's Harvest, y'all. 10% off with promo code PERMA. And in light of everything going on in the world right now, folks, you might want to seriously think about this stuff. I mean, everything that you can't source and store yourself, which is probably a great deal, things that you can't pick up at the shelf, freeze-dried food, water purification, any of that stuff, folks, I'm telling you, you need to seriously think about your preparedness. And I'm going to be talking more and more about that after this program. I just don't want to beat a dead horse right now, but folks, think about Heaven's Harvest, seriously. 10% off with promo code PERMA. And if you would like to go check us out on the Fountain app, where you can listen to all your podcasts over there, and you can triple up the speed if you'd like. You can also drop some sats, SATs, to some PIMPs over there. That's a derivation of Bitcoin. And you can definitely leave comments over there. So we cover all of the above over there. Well, son, we ain't going to fool around. We'll just jump straight into the farm news. We had to process some sheep yesterday.
Yep, the ram, and also there was the female that came with the ewe that came with him, right?
Yeah. She was not good from the word go, and he, despite being, you know, highly touted for his parasite resistance, was not. So they both had to graduate to the freezer. It was kind of disappointing. I mean, it really was on so many different levels. Folks, I'm telling you, I don't care, you know, about the person's credentials, whatever the case may be. You got to go. Every sign in the world was telling me, move on, don't do it. Just buy some from Greg Judy. I didn't do it, and I paid the piper for it. But the good thing is that Ben and Denise over at Renewed Homestead, they got an extra ram, and I know he's robust. And I'm going to bring him over here, and we're going to do like we have been, y'all, culling heavily. Because seriously, if you don't, you might as well just start a petting zoo.
Would you agree that like mediocre stock that came from a regenerative like farm or something like that is better than the world's best commercial stock?
It's basically what I've witnessed. Yeah. It really is. I should have. There's so many things. Look, y'all, you're going to make mistakes in this. And no matter where you are in the continuum, I don't care. I mean, talk to Greg Judy himself. And he's still making pretty colossal mistakes because he's willing to take risks.
And that statement wasn't to say Ben and Denise have mediocre stock. That's not where I meant. That's not where I was going with that.
No. The fact of it is that, you know, they haven't been using any drugs.
Yeah.
You know that these animals have not been given any crutches. And look, at the end of the day, look, I know other people like Daniel Amick, hardcore regenerative farmer of his own right out there in central Tennessee. He basically started, like so many other people, with a flock that had been basically given all the crutches, name it. And then just good with good rotational grazing, good selection, good culling. He's been able to come up with a pretty doggone impressive flock. And that's exactly what we're working on, too. Look, I love you dearly, but if at the end of the day you're not doing what you're supposed to do, you don't shed what you're supposed to, your hooves got to be messed with, you're constantly sick. I mean, everything from the word go on these two animals. The other ones look like they're going to pan out all right.
Yeah.
But the other two, the ram, plus he had anger management issues, which was going to be a problem anyway.
Which was getting worse, I thought.
Yeah.
It didn't start up. He started off kind of skittish, and then he started warming up to us a little bit, and then he started like ramming us if we didn't have a bucket of comfrey or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's those characteristics I'm just not going to tolerate. So, the good thing is that, you know, if it lived, it can live again. So these guys and gals are going to live on basically in the next compost pile. So
the organs, the meat organs. Is in the freezer.
Yeah. Everything we don't eat basically wound up in that compost pile. And that's exactly. So all the people out there that are complaining about, oh, what do you do with this? What do you do with that? That's why you should know how to compost. Or you can do it the long way like Joel Salatin does, man. He got a cow that dies. He'll just shove the whole doggone thing and then cover it up with wood mulch.
Right. That's going to take a while.
It takes a while. Yeah. It takes a while doing it that way, but it can be done. I mean, they're basically nitrogen by and large. You're going to make the process go a little bit quicker if you can cut them up a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, these organs, I needed to add some heat to a pile anyway, so bam. It's getting done. So anyway, those guys are into the freezer, and we'll pick up a new ram. And like I said, I'll just keep culling heavily. I mean, that's exactly how you get the stock you want. So, you know, I don't care where they are in that continuum. You don't produce live young. You're not a good mother. In the freezer, you're going to go. No two ways about that. So that's just the way it's got to be. And we even did like a video that'll probably come out next week, going in a little more detail about that sort of thing. But just keep that in mind, folks. If you're getting into this thing, you're going to have losses, number one, that may not be your fault. Some of them will be your fault. Other losses are going to be because you created them. Maybe you didn't see something. Maybe, you know, everything told me, do not get these.
Could be. And I did. Could be ignorance. Yeah. You could be. I mean, there are some losses you're going to have in the beginning just due to ignorance.
All the telltale signs, and you saw them too.
Yeah.
When we were there, we just believed his pedigree and should have passed on him. Shouldn't have taken him.
Yeah.
Because when we got him home, I'm realizing, oh, these animals have been given some crutches.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But just based on the setup that was there and just to maintain and shoot up the animals and stuff like that, it was a really cool system and setup. It's just in these larger regenerative spaces, you don't need half that equipment because you ain't shooting them up with stuff.
No, that's exactly right. And if you do, into the feedlot they're going to go, they shouldn't be animals. We want animals like, you know, your best friend. You know, you want the best friends out there, people that generally don't require, you don't have to coddle them every day. You don't have to hold their hand every day. Yeah, there are times you got to lift them up, but you got to take that same approach to your animals. Well, actually, it's probably the other way around. People probably crutch their animals more than they do people. So,
depending, yeah.
So you want to make sure you stay away from those things. And then when you do go into them, look, worst case scenario, we still put them in the fridge and made money on the deal.
Yeah. They're probably wondering, everybody's probably wondering why we're recording this early and where one of us is going.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's part of it. So we're not going to have a download from Pastor Lon today because Michelle and I are going to be heading off to an Earthship build in Tennessee. So we're going to do that for a couple of days. It's still in the cards on down the line. They're building the exact model of Earthship I'm interested in. So I want to go out there. It's only 3 hours, 3.5 hours away from here. So I'm going to go check it out, even though we're like up to our eyeballs in so many things. It's just I'm not going to have another weekend to be able to do this because every other weekend we're on, you know, there's a festival all the way out through this month. We got a grandchild being born. This is pretty much the only opportunity we're going to have to get this done that is nearby. So,
and mom hasn't been to a single, she's never seen an Earthship, has she?
No. Yeah. So she's going to get to put her hands on it and probably have a sore back. She's always suffering with back issues anyway. So I'll have to just watch her and make sure she doesn't overdo it because, I mean, lady, I'm telling y'all, this lady is strong and tough and she doesn't complain, but she will get an attitude when her back's hurting. So, and I'm usually the one that's got to deal with that. So at the end of the day, we want to make sure we keep her safe. Got to look after the homestead, honey. So yeah, that's something we're going to be doing. All right. So before we get into, you know, the festival's coming up, I want to touch real quick on this Middle East thing. You know, when we did that program a couple of days ago, I had no idea. I didn't know what the fallout would be, really didn't care, and I still don't care because I know what the truth is. I know what makes sense. I know what's common sense. And I'm not going to let some profligate prostitute or a pundit or a politician tell me what happened when I got my own sense. I got my own common sense. And you know what we're finding out is that just days removed, a lot of what I said is being verified. You know, I didn't realize it, but other podcasts, I thought they would stay away from this thing. I had no idea that people like, you could have knocked me over with a feather when Andy Frisella said almost word for word what we said on this podcast.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I was like, okay, well, I didn't need his confirmation, but it sure did help that he backed up pretty much everything I said and even added his own to it.
One thing that is shocking is the bloodlusting lefties that are wanting to destroy. Like, was it not too long ago they were fighting for Palestine? Like, they were like putting up their Twitter flags and their logos and all that stuff.
I'll tell you what's what even worse. I'm finding all these people that call themselves preachers and Christians sitting here saying, oh, we need to go carpet bomb this. First of all, you don't even know, or like Andy said, you know, I stand with Israel. I stand with the Palestinians. I don't stand with either one of them. I stand with Americans, and not all Americans at that.
Well, these preachers and pastors and stuff like that saying destroy the Gaza Strip, do they not realize how many, not that this should be one way or the other, like you shouldn't destroy an entire civilization of humans, but how many of those Palestinians are Christians?
Nobody ever talks about that. And that's the part that burns me up. You have no idea. Do you know how many people are absolute Christians that live in Gaza?
Nadia, Jeff Lawton's wife, was telling me about how diverse just like Jordan is. It wasn't Nadia. It was the mother of some family that came over for Muslim aid. She was telling me how diverse Jordan is.
Yes.
It's like there isn't this hatred between Muslims and Christians and like they can't get along. It's like, yeah, you might have spits and spats and stuff, but they're freaking neighbors.
Yeah, they get along. Exactly. And you know what? I can give you the history on it. You know what? Before the Balfour, or just the Balfour Declaration, which I won't go into right now. Good night, man. I mean, there was opportunity after opportunity for them to have fought before then. They got along just fine. There were Jews, Christians, Muslims, all coexisting in the same place. And like you said, they would have their spats, but nothing major.
Right.
And got along just fine. Now, all of a sudden, does this look a little bit orchestrated? But it is disgusting hearing these so-called preachers out there saying, you don't even know what happened, first of all. You have no tactical understanding or any common sense for you to sit here and buy this story hook, line, and sinker. And then here, what are we finding out? I wish I would have said it before. What are we finding out? So much of this footage was either stock footage, or they're claiming this woman was raped, had all the pictures, and then it turns out her mom says, no, she's at the house right now. What are y'all talking about?
Yeah.
So over and over and over again with all these things that they go down law, just remember, the first casualty in every war is the truth. And that's exactly how it goes. But I wanted to cover this again on another matter. Look, folks, I'm just going to tell you, I'm batting 1,000 on this, and I'm going to tell you, man, it's tough for me to even say it because I hate speaking these things in. Folks, I'm telling you, you better get your beans and bullets on point, because what you see over there is a microcosm of what's about to happen here in the United States of Amnesia. I mean, the fire is lit. You better have your preparedness food. You better have your water. You better have your medical supplies. You better have all the stuff you need, because no, I don't stand with either one of them. I don't stand. I'm an American first. And just like William said in the last program, let's be honest here. How many German American dual citizens do you have in Congress?
Can't think of any.
Irish American citizens? How many of them? And you tell me they should have any kind of influence. I don't care where you stand biblically on this. This is a common sense thing. If you have somebody that has loyalties outside of the United States, you should be bringing that into question. But I remember my friend Steve, I remember him just asking this question one time in a social media forum one time. And they came down on him like a ton of bricks.
Yep.
Because he asked that question to a guy that I believe was running for political office. Came down on, oh, you're anti-Semitic. Well, what? Because I asked if you have dual citizenship?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, how do you jump to that? And plus, all these other people over there, they're Semites too.
Yeah.
They're Semites too. So let's all get this straight. But it's making me sick what I see going on out there. The people that are most willing to say, let's go over there and carpet bomb, let's murder everybody, are people that have never been in a fist fight in their whole life, have no idea the desolation of war and what that creates, have no idea what it does to the families. And yeah, like I said before in the last one, a lot of you people, maybe not the people listening right now, because I'm sure we lost some people over that last one. I really don't care. When you get down to brass tacks, people will consider it a badge of honor to have their child die on Israeli soil.
Yep.
Well, you know what? How about all the people that just died over here in the inner city? How about all these people that just died over here for this pestilence, which now, by the way, the Japanese say that every single variant, nobody's talking about this, every single variant of COVID, it was all manufactured.
Or maybe they were about to, and then they blew up Israel. Then they're like, all right, Hamas, go ahead and attack.
Yeah. Japanese came out with that, proved it, without a doubt. So every single variant, but you think the prostitutes are going to tell you that? These same people that are telling you to go over there and carpet bomb and murder all these people, first of all, don't even know, have never been in any kind of skirmish or conflict, never even got the knuckles bloody, and you're going to sit over here and tell me you need to go carpet bomb and murder these people? You turned off all the water and the food going there. You don't even know what happened. By every stretch of the imagination, this was a false flag. False flag doesn't mean it didn't happen. False flag means, first of all, we're seeing a lot of fake footage out of here. False flag means that basically you allowed this thing to happen on you. You might have even orchestrated just so you can blame your enemy.
Yeah, instead of getting pissed off at Hamas, maybe get pissed off at your own government saying, like, hey, what happened to the Iron Dome? Why didn't that work? What happened to all these defenses? Like, America's been funding our defenses for I don't even know how long. Why don't we have the best?
Son, there's not one part of this. Whether it's the paratroopers coming from the sky, the D-Day invasion that happened over here, there is not one aspect.
And not even paratroopers. Yeah, hang gliders.
Hang gliders. You came rolling over on hang gliders. I mean, good night, man. I mean, and then you're going to sit here and tell me, this is where I knew, when you're talking about the babies in incubators, oh, sound like the first Iraq war or sound like World War One? You know, babies on bayonets. When they start pulling that stuff, it is something they are recycling from the past. Believe me, I got the goods. They did it in World War One. They did it in the first Gulf War. They did it in war after war after war after war, basically to paint your supposed enemy, the people you want to hate, saying that they're throwing babies on the floor. How much
they
of
just
that?
Did it with Putin.
Thank you.
They just did it with Russia and Ukraine.
Did it with Assad in Syria. Did it with Assad. Said he's gassing his own people. And then
Coney with the child warriors and stuff like that whenever I was in high school.
Yeah.
It's constant. It's like, it's almost like a litmus test just to see, all right, well, they react to this one. What about this one? What about this one?
My best friend, I was having your Uncle Dion the other day, man. He said something to me that was just shocking. Because there are times, man, he can come up with some stuff that'll just floor you because of how his brain works and how he thinks like multidimensionally in ways that it's really, that when he says it, you're like, what? So here's what he said. He says, honestly, because I sat here, called him up. I said, hey, man, okay, you're a soldier. You're an infantryman. And then I didn't even get the words out of my mouth. He says, yeah, it's already BS.
Yeah.
He says, I already know. And then he goes on to say, he says, you know what? I had this thought the other day. I think the powers that shouldn't be, they thought, okay, well, typically when you have a recession, people stop spending. They hoard their money. Mm-hmm. Then it just makes the depression even worse. He says, have you noticed we're in a recession? You know, call it whatever you want, but people are still spending like drunken sailors. So that didn't crash the economy. It's like, hang on, it's flying right in the face. He's basically saying that in the smoke-filled rooms, they're saying, man, these people are dumber than we thought. Their stupidity is actually outwitting us because we thought that they would hoard their money, but they're actually spending like drunken sailors. Mm. And he's like, okay, so what? Okay, what else do we need to do to kill these people?
Yeah,
and that's where we're at.
Yeah.
What are we going to say?
I don't know that people are spending their money like drunken sailors. I think there might be, I don't know that they are. Because like the restaurants in Asheville and stuff, like now is tourist like season for Asheville because the leaves are changing. But like business hasn't started going up at
all. Well, that's not entirely. If you check out the Chamber of Commerce, I checked the at the bakery and they said, here's what's happening. People are still going on vacation in the same numbers. The only difference is they're cooking in their rooms or they're getting convenience foods or they're, instead of going out to eat for a couple of meals a day, what they'll wind up where they would go out and eat three meals a day, they'll go buy a rotisserie chicken somewhere and something from a grocery store where they could feed the whole family for real cheap, you know, or for cheaper. Because when you were a kid, you and your mom, I mean, me and your mom, man, good night, dude. We would literally go on a picnic. Your mom loves picnics or did when we lived in Colorado. We would literally go down to King Supers in Colorado Springs, get a whole like eight piece chicken meal, two sides, and then a bunch of biscuits. And we were just feeding us. Of course, you were drinking out of a bottle at the time. And we would get all that for $4.
Oh, wow.
For $4. I mean, so people are doing their equivalent of it now with all the inflation and everything. So that was how you and your, me and your mom would go. And we had very, you know, all soldiers were broke back then, man. So we would try to find clever ways. And plus, being in Colorado, there was always some place to, beautiful place to go. So it was, you know, that's how we would spend our time. So, or our spare time anyway, because we sure didn't have any money. And so that's exactly, I think, what's going on right now. So he's saying basically that people are still spending their money and it didn't create the depression that they expected. So now, like, okay, let's try another thing.
Yeah.
That didn't work. And then here we go and go. Folks, I said all that to say this. Once again, I know I already said it, but I'm going to say it again. It is becoming consequential beyond words. People like Martin Armstrong, one of the best forecasters out there, people like Gerald Celente, people like a number of other trends forecasters, they don't always agree, but they are agreeing right now. They're saying, look, basically, the time's practically run out. You better be doing what you're doing. You better be growing food. You better be thinking about your beans and bullets. You better be thinking about all this stuff because it is about to get real and it's probably going to happen here. Will this thing escalate in the Middle East? I don't know. I mean, nobody knows. Everybody thinks it's going to be, it has every indication that it could, but who even knows what scams and schemes. It could have been like, hey, we just need a, we need to get the heat off of Netanyahu right now because he was on the ropes politically.
Oh.
Well, guess what nobody else is talking about? Joe Biden and his corruption. Guess what? Nobody's talking about anything else the entire news cycle. In fact, I'll know for sure when we get to whatever hotel we're going to be at tonight. I'll get in there and see what the prostitutes are saying on that. All right, y'all. So I didn't, once again, mean to spend so much time on that. But, hey, speaking of getting ready, Mountain Readiness is coming up, y'all, October 20th and 22nd. We're going to leave a link for that down below, or you can go to the website. A lot of, look, this is one of those, the two festivals I'm going to talk about right now have done something extraordinary. They're combining homesteading and preparedness. Huh, what a concept. And this is where you can get some of those skills. I'm going to be breaking out one of my knot tying courses, and this stuff is very, very useful. Going to be a lot of other people out there, and they're going to be dropping some good stuff. Also, Kentucky Sustainable Living, going to be at that one also. And that's October 28th and 29th. I'll be there, and they're going to have a Vets for Child Rescue dinner where you can get some VIP tickets. Going to be fed some prime rib, and the proceeds go to Vets for Child Rescue. So hope to see y'all there. Look, this is where you get those skills, y'all. I know you can get some of it off the internet, and that's great, but if you want to learn how to process a pig in person, Darren Strong is going to be there. I'm going to be assisting him, and we're going to show you how it's done. All right, y'all, so get into some good news. All right, well, maybe I should have structured this a little bit differently. So check this out, and I know I got a weird twist on good and bad news. I know, but I'll just go ahead and get to it. Check this out, and there's a reason I'm calling it good news. Biden regime is forcing Americans trapped in Israel to sign promissory notes to repay all travel costs if they decide to be rescued by the U.S. government.
What?
Dude, you can't make this up. You can't make this up. How about all them taxes I've been paying?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're extracting this pound of flesh out of me in the form of taxes, but you know, I got to do an IOU, like, for this.
You shouldn't have to sign an IOU for your own country to come save you.
Yeah. Oh, how about it? Aren't they supposed to be our greatest ally?
Supposed to be like a benefit of being part of one country, I would think, is like, hey, they're going to keep me safe, or they're going to come get me if I need to.
You're wishing you was Canadian right now, don't you? Yeah. So I don't know how many people are listening. Yeah, we do have some listeners in the Middle East. So anyway, yeah, the reason I'm saying that's good news, y'all, it's going to have to get much worse. As bad as it seems right now, starvation is the only thing that cures this. You doubt me? Go ask Pastor Lon. All right, CDC, this is other good news. CDC stops printing and begins phasing out COVID-19 vaccination cards. How about that?
Why did they were still printing them?
Yeah.
I didn't know anybody was even like paying attention to them anymore.
Well, at this point, because I think nobody was falling for the latest pestilence out there, you know, because they were bleeding that up. And believe me, they'll bring that one back out when it makes sense.
Yep.
So they were pulling the latest one, which, like I said, the Japanese proved that all 100% of all the, quote, COVID variants and probably COVID itself were all manufactured.
Wow.
How about that? Japanese proved that. So all of a sudden, you know, they're saying, well, we ain't going to need these cards anymore.
It makes you wonder at what countries were left out of the secret, like out of the plan and stuff like that with COVID.
Well, that's exactly why I'm saying that everybody's kidding themselves. I can just look at the way COVID went down. Okay, Russia. Yeah, they're in on it too. Every leader, that African leader, I can't remember what country it was from, sent in a papaya and a goat. And it came back positive, right, both of them, for COVID. And he was a doctor, as I recall. Oh, well, where's he right now?
Isn't he dead?
Dead right there in the grave. They murdered him. They murdered every other person. And what was it? The guy in Haiti said, nope, we ain't dealing with this.
Yeah.
And they've either been ousted or dead. And everybody else basically played along, got the people all vaxxed up. To what degree this stuff was a placebo, I don't know. But Putin, all the others, this is why I'm saying there are powers, principalities, wickedness in high places, y'all, that are calling the shots here, because that is the only way. In fact, if I remember right, it's because of that is why Bobby Spaggs ended up giving his life to the Lord. That was why, is that seeing that there was no way you could coordinate all of these world leaders.
Yeah.
Yeah. Be wise, O ye kings of the earth. Oh, my goodness. Be instructed, ye rulers. Yeah, right there in Psalm 2. And good night, man. I mean, why did the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against his anointed, saying, let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking right now. A little sideways, but just felt the need to say it. All right. So other good news. Drinking de-alcoholized muscadine wine found to improve skin boy, there's a lot of tongue twisters. Hold on,
hand that over.
Okay, yeah, you drink that. You read it, man, whatever.
Drinking de-alcoholized muscadine wine found to improve skin elasticity in middle-aged and older
who
women.
Who wrote that? Yeah.
Yeah, who? Natural News. We need to talk to them about that. Yeah,
who came up with that headline, man?
They
who
didn't say
read
it
that?
Out loud, that's well, you, for sure.
That's what I get for not reading it out. I could say it in my mind, but actually saying it was another thing. Well, basically, it's finding out, look, if you can take the booze out of the muscadine wine, how about just drink some muscadine grapes?
Yeah, can you drink just juice?
I just like taking, when I eat muscadines, that's one of those things that brings me back. First of all, I thought that would be really, really helpful to a lot of people out there. But honestly, grapes are pretty doggone easy to grow in a lot of places. And muscadines, especially if you're in the South. I mean,
hold on,
scupperdongs, muscadines.
I got caught up on the words. What was it actually saying? It improves what?
If you can just basically drink muscadine juice,
yeah,
your skin elasticity is basically going to help out. So for all the people out there that are stressed a little bit, skin's getting a little bit jacked up, coming up on winter, so it's going to get dry. You know, drinking some of that muscadine juice is probably going to help you.
I wonder if like just muscadine vinegar, like let the wine keep going and turn it into vinegar. I wonder if you could have benefits that way.
There's probably something really, really good with that. No doubt about it. But I mean, that's one of those things when I taste currants, muscadines, it takes me right back. It, you know, smells and tastes are very, very evocative. And that's one of those things that when I eat them, man, it takes me right back to where I was 8 years old, picking them off the tree, getting mulberries. Grandma would make a pie and stuff like that. I mean, it's just magical stuff. So anyway, that was an article that just makes me feel better. Hopefully it makes everybody else. All right, y'all, with that, we're going to go on to Eric, my homeboy.
Hey, Eric Sider here with your PimpCast tip of the day. Today's tip, defining permaculture. There are almost as many ways to define permaculture as people practicing it. The definition will naturally change based on who you are talking to. My standard version is this. Permaculture is an ethical design system for creating sustainable human environments. This naturally leads to explaining the three ethics of permaculture: earth care, people care, and the return of surplus, as well as the true definition of sustainability: a system that produces more energy than it consumes. And going further, I would add that Permaculture focuses on food production and energy efficiency, working with nature to benefit the larger ecosystem. I also really like the concept of permaculture as the wardrobe or toolbox, and all disciplines and elements fit within inside it, because permaculture is not about any one discipline or element. It is about the connections we can create between them by the way we place them in the landscape. And in classic permaculture style, the problem of defining permaculture is also the solution, as it requires a conversation, not merely a statement. You can find me on YouTube and Instagram at Eric Sider, and if you're in need of permaculture t-shirts or remote permaculture consultation and design, head over to ericsider.com.
That's my dog right there, y'all. Go check out Eric Sider. Wise man.
Yeah, I'm going to download that to my phone and just play that every time somebody asks me what permaculture
and
is.
And you know what they're going to do? They're still going to say, yeah, okay, so what? So tell, yeah, I mean, the problem, that has always been a problem with permaculture, is there's no concise, simple definition, and it just can't be. Like Eric said, then you got to lead into the ethics.
Yeah.
And this is also why I think, which by the way, y'all, if you're watching YouTube and you see us right now, guess who? 99% of the time you see him in a t-shirt, it's Eric Sider's shirt, because he's got the best conversation. In fact, when I went to the Earthship build out there in Arizona that time, all I had was Eric's shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Every single day, man, everybody's like, dude, where do I get that shirt? Where do I get that shirt? And yeah, Eric's where I get all my shirts. So go check him out on YouTube, y'all. Go check him out all the way around, consultations, you name it. That's my dog. But, you know, man, when we get down to it, it's here's one thing I'm going to suggest. Learn, no matter what discipline you, okay, let's just say it's orcharding, okay?
Yeah.
Go find at least a couple of people and find out how they do it before you decide on what method you want to do.
Yeah.
We'll cover that in a minute, because that's really kind of the main topic. But no matter the discipline, like Eric says, it's a toolbox. So you'll find people out there that, you know, like swales. And then what do they wind up doing? Putting swales in places they shouldn't have been in the first place.
Right.
So then you got swales in places where you shouldn't have. It's too steep, or it just doesn't make sense. Or you're in a place where you're in a rainforest and you didn't need it at all.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you got to make sure you take the right dog to the hunt, and learning from multiple people helps. All right. Before we get into it, y'all, EMP Shield, $50 off with promo code PERMA. Remember, the number one threat you suffer, well, these days, I would say lightning, which is probably still is, but, you know, you got people, I would say the names right now, but, you know, there's a lot about people predicting, okay, an EMP. Okay, that could happen. I mean, anything could happen. But I'm going to tell you, EMP Shield, y'all, they got the best device out there. Take it from me, a journeyman electrician with 25 years experience. I put in a lot of surge suppressors, transient voltage surge suppression, you name it. There ain't nobody that even comes close to EMP Shield. That's why I reached out to them to be a sponsor on this show. So $50 off with promo code PERMA, P-E-R-M-A. Go check them out. All right, so we're going to get right into the main topic. And folks, I'll be honest with you. It's difficult for me to not go dark in these times. And what do I mean by that? I kind of halfway did it in the farm section, but I feel like I got to put this out there, y'all. I'm trying to keep it more upbeat these days, trying to stick more to the permaculture as best I can, but I feel like I'd be remiss if I didn't at least give you my take on this stuff, because I know you're being lied to. And many of you don't work jobs. You may be driving in your car right now, going to work, coming to work. Maybe you're at work, and maybe you're not in a position like I am, where not only do I work all day, and I mean work all day and usually much into the night as well. Usually don't get to bed till around midnight, and then I'm up early in the morning. So till I finally hit a point where I hit that brick wall, then, you know, I'll, you know, try to get rest wherever I can. Point being is I'm studying this stuff, have been for years and years and years. Don't have all the answers, but I can tell you when I smell BS. I've worked in the media. I've been there. I know how these stories go. I know how they frame it. I know how they lie to you. So I'm going to try to keep one foot there to tell you exactly what I think. And I'm also going to try to keep one foot in the permaculture world as best I can. So this is something that's kind of important. We just did something of a magnum opus of a video. So you want to tell them what we just recorded out there?
How to prepare your food forest for winter. Yeah, so that way you don't have to like maintain it, and everything can be getting better over the winter as well. Well, do you want me to go into the details of the video?
Well, let me kind of lay it out like this. So let's say you have an orchard or a food forest. Now, you want to tell them the differences, first of all?
It's just organization, really. I mean, that's the biggest difference between an orchard and a food forest.
Well, orchard, you're also going to, it's going to require a little bit more out of you, depending on what kind of orchard you want. You're going to prune, you're going to do this, you're going to do that. And then you have a food forest where you're pretty much, you know, if anything becomes a problem child, yeah, you want to deal with it in terms of it's, if it's in lines and rows. It's really up to you what you do to it. And so I got this food forest out there that I'm pretty much letting do its own thing. It's like, hey, I'm just going to put you in place, give you what you need, and back off. Here's why I want all of you to consider this. First of all, is that it's fall of the year right now, okay? So carbon's pretty easy to come by because leaves are falling. That's carbon. And when you get those leaves, you can make some compost out of it. If you'd like, you can mince them up, get wood chips. Right now is a pretty good time to dress your trees. But the reason I'm bringing this up right now, y'all, is I'm trying to focus on food solutions that are passive. What do I mean by that? When I say passive food production, I'm talking about the kind of food production where you can kind of put it in place and then it doesn't require a whole lot out of you. And that's what a food forest represents. Is it going to give you the greatest yield? No. But you didn't work for any of it for the most part.
Right.
You weren't out there pruning. You weren't doing this. Look, here it is in a nutshell. Here it is in as nutshell as a nutshell as I can find. And I go into greater detail in the video. So let's say I got a tree. First of all, I wouldn't have laid it out in such a way to where I'm putting my nitrogen fixers every third tree. So all the trees around it get the benefit of that nitrogen fixer. All right. Around each tree is going to be a guild. We talked about that. A guild is basically a collection of plants where imagine like it's an orchestra. Everybody's doing something different, but it all works together for a common goal. That's what a guild does. You can look at it like a rock band. It doesn't matter. Pick your metaphor. So once I go out there and I put these things in place, I want to make sure, like right now, I want to make sure that I go through each lane and line, do everything that needs to get done. Why? Because I'm trampling on food as I'm getting up and down there.
Right.
I want to do a Machiavelli on here. Like Machiavelli writes in The Prince that, look, if you're going to do good, if you're going to do anything bad, do it all up front. And then whatever good you got, you let it trickle out over time. That's really about how he put it. I mean, and that's exactly what these politicians do. Politicians do it all the time. Well, you want to take the same kind of approach when it comes to your aisles and rows. The great Stefan Subkoviak, that's part of what he does, and that's part of what I learned from him, is that if you're going to have some trampling going up and down those rows, you want it to be brief. And if it's going to be an impact, you want to do it all at once and then give it all the time it needs to recover. So all the trees and the lines and rows down one line, don't go over here and then go on the other side of the orchard. Do everything in that area. So here's how I'm going to do it. If you're going to prune, well, you want to wait till the leaves are off. That's really the best time to do it because all the sugars are down in the roots. And then when spring rolls around, it'll blow up. But I'm not doing that in the food forest. So what I'm going to do is first go down each line and lane. Anything that's in the way, you gots to go. That's the only pruning I'm going to do.
Yeah.
Now, because our soil is so alive and so fungal right now, you can put down a piece of cardboard, cover it up with some wood mulch, and it won't be there in a month. That's a good problem to have. That tells you your soil is very alive. That's exactly what you want. So I'll go down there, remulch everything around every tree. Chop and drop some comfrey, which obviously we sell at the website, using the rice knife, which we sell at the website. Drop that comfrey. Put your cardboard down. You can go, what, three thick at least?
Oh, well, yeah. Bill Mollison told Jeff Lawton you can go up to 3 feet high before this surface and cardboard layer goes anaerobic.
You can go that high, but who's ever going to do that?
Right, yeah. It just tells you that you're not going to put down too much.
There you go.
Within reason.
That's exactly. I mean, we've had mulch rings as high as 3 feet around that chicken coop back in Texas at that one property. Good night, man. You would not even believe what that thing did. Point being is that I'm going down through there, putting down my cardboard, putting down my comfrey, laying my wood mulch on top of it, knowing full well that when is the best time for things to compost, son, in the soil?
Yeah, over the winter, preferably with snow on top, because that's the perfect temperature. It's the perfect environment. It's a slow drip of water into the pile, stuff like that.
And your microbes love it. They absolutely yeah. love it. So it's when that snowfall happens. So here's what I'm saying. Get ahead of it. Don't wait till spring. Do it right now. Do it in the winter. Well, I'd do it before winter. Do it in the fall. You want to do it about this time right now because you're getting the benefit of all your microbes making that soil more bioavailable for your trees, for your ground cover, which in our case is strawberries. So as I'm going up and down, I'm doing this row, I'm doing everything up and down, just that row alone. Don't go to the next row, just stick to that one because I'm creating a great deal of impact walking in and out, in and out, in and out, whether it's putting down a cardboard, whether it's putting down a wood mulch, whether it's doing this and that. Do it all at once. Now here we are in mid-October and I will not have to, I literally will not have to go out there. In fact, I put bone sauce on everything all over again.
Yep.
I will not have to walk back down that thing barring some calamity until March.
Yeah.
I will not have to go full around in there till March. Now that's me not being in there and all the microbes are doing all the work for me. This is why we are able to do extraordinary things in record time, folks. Use the weather in your favor. Use the carbon cycle in your favor. Use all these things in your favor. Your rainfall, your evaporation, use it all in your favor. And right now is a really great time for those perennial systems to get them on steroids. I mean steroids, literally.
Yeah, literally.
When you're kicking this stuff off, y'all. If you saw the growth, it was like, it was just months ago. I put down some not even aged wood chips in a lot of these areas. Yeah. And it's gone.
Yeah.
So, folks, that's what you want to see. That's the kind of growth you want to see in your property, in your orchards, in your food forests. So you're giving this stuff a really awesome nutrient boost. And if you want, like I said, you can put some of that volcanic rock dust down. You can also put down some compost and then put your cardboard down, then put your wood mulch on top of it. It's only going to speed things up even quicker if you can throw down some compost.
Right.
So yeah. That's going to kick your, that, I mean, your, if it's good compost, it's giving these microbes an unfair advantage, which is exactly what you want. So we're using compost teas to achieve the same exact thing to make the comfrey or the compost go even further. So that's another great benefit, another great virtue of the things we're doing. So even in your garden, let's say some of it you're going to let go for a while. Well, if you're going to do that, you know what might be a really good idea, especially in your raised beds? Maybe you're not growing anything in there right now. Maybe you're going to give it a rest. Lay down a little scattering of compost. Throw some cardboard on top. Throw a bunch of hay on top. Do that.
Yeah.
Put a bunch of carbon in. Just let it go through the winter. Same thing's going to happen.
Or a cover crop if you live in an area where you can get away with it. Yeah.
Yes,
do like a clover cover crop to get ready for next spring if you wanted.
Or Fukuoka 101 where I'll go out there. Okay, got a field full of clover.
Yep.
Okay, I'm just going to pull out what I don't want, plant what I do want, and the clover just keeps growing around it.
Yeah.
How about that? So same thing for your orchard, y'all. Go through. I don't know who puts out this stuff where they're saying everybody waits till spring to put out their trees. That is insanity if you don't have to. Now, in some cases, well, you don't have a choice.
It kind of makes sense because it's harder to, from a nursery standpoint, it's harder to sell a bunch of people dormant trees that look like a bunch of Charlie Brown Christmas trees than it is to show the, or sell them like, hey, here's this beautiful tree with all the leaves on it in a pot.
Good. All the more reasons why you can go get it at a discount at your local nursery because they know nobody else is selling them. Believe it or not, man, I've gotten some really good trees. I know people might think I'm crazy. I've gotten them off of Etsy at times where I needed trees, especially nitrogen fixers.
The trees I would go with because worst case scenario, you can like let the tree grow up, identify it, and then you know make sure it is what it's supposed to be. I wouldn't get seeds off Etsy.
No. The trees, I've had really good luck and saved a bunch of money getting them off of Etsy at a time where I needed them. So that's really good resource right there. But yeah, if you can, as soon as those leaves come off, believe me, you can go gangbusters. Go ahead, put that sucker in the ground right now because Dr. Carl Whitcomb out of Oklahoma State basically proved and his work is fantastic. I believe Eric Sider looked into his work as well. They're putting down all the growth through the fall and the winter, and then you give them an unfair advantage when spring rolls around because they will blow up. We've done it over and over again. Also, putting a nitrogen fixer in the very same hole as your productive tree. We just gave you an example in this video of two trees planted at exactly the same time. I would say the growth on that apple compared to, I didn't notice what, I think it was a pear next to it.
Oh, I thought it was an apple.
They're planted in the same space. And we have example after example after example where we have a nitrogen fixer. Even though everybody says, don't do it, we do it. And it works like nobody's business.
Well, just the apple on that corner there.
Yes.
That was a really dramatic example at the beginning. Because that was planted at the same time as the rest of that row. And it shot up way past everything.
And it's also a problem child to a certain extent. These right. things grow so incredibly fast when you put that nitrogen fixer in there. I don't know how many times we got to prove it. And people are still saying, oh, well, that's stupid. Well, you go out there and do it yourself. Go try it. Put that nitrogen, for example, take a, something you can constantly coppice. I mean,
It could be a black locust.
It could be a black locust. I would prefer it to be something you could chop and drop and leave on the spot.
Right. Like, so, moringa would be awesome if you lived in an area where you could use it.
Good night, man. Moringa would be a fantastic choice. But in a lot of places, let's say a redbud is what you got.
Mm-hmm.
Coppice that bad boy back. Don't even try to remove it. Just cut it up in place. And then so somebody says, well, you're going to kill the tree. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't care because every time I chop it back, it's going to come back even stronger. Go for it. Put that nitrogen fixer in the same hole. You're just going to have to go back and chop it every once in a while. But it's feeding. I mean, son, how many examples do we need all through those food forests?
Works.
And I still got people telling me, oh, that's such an awful idea. Well, look, I got the goods, nephew. I can show it to you. I can go out there and show it to you right now how every tree that is in the same, every nitrogen fixer that's in the same hole as a productive tree is blowing up. So those are all the things you can do right now. You want to start an orchard? Okay, you're not going to see the fruits till spring, but you're going to give yourself the best chance of survival if you go out there, plant that bare root tree, put a real good mulch ring around it, put some good compost around it if you can. Don't try to mix it in the hole. Don't do any of that stuff. Put it on the surface. Let your worms do all that work for you. Plus, it's what nature does. And that's another piece of work from Dr. Wickham.
And another important detail is to make sure your mulch ring looks like a donut, not a volcano.
Thank you. Thank you. He's talking about landing on the side. I don't know what is up with the lunatics around here, man.
I think what it is a lot of people, like, if you look at the big commercial areas, like the trees at like Walmart or Hobby Lobby or anything like that, they hire these contractors to come in and do mulching. They're just dumping mulch, spreading it out as quickly as possible because they're viewing it as like a construction job.
Yeah, it's a bad idea, but folks, I'm saying all this, it goes right. The reason I'm telling you, the reason I really wanted to do this show, number one, think about those perennial systems, those ones you can put in the ground and you don't require a whole lot after that. You do a little bit of maintenance per year, but it's nowhere close to the amount of maintenance you do in an annual system.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, there's so many perennial things that you can do out there.
If nothing else, you don't have to keep planting the same doggone thing over and over
again.
That's
right. I put in this tree, it's going to provide shade. I mean, it does so much. We've talked about it over and over and over again. Well, folks, that's food for thought. When we get back, straight into Chef. Well, actually, we're going to go to Chef Snow, then into the Q&A.
Hey, Chef Keith Snow with HarvestEating.com with your Pimp Cast tip of the day. So it's October right now. It's apple season. And if you go to your local apple stand or farm market, whatever, you should be able to get some delicious local apples. What I love to do this time of year is make my own cider. You don't need to buy expensive cider, although I have no problem in supporting local farm stands, but you can go to these places and buy apples that they consider seconds, so they don't look so great. You can buy a nice couple pecks of apples, take a case of seconds home, and make your own apple cider. The only thing you need to make it really easy is a juicer or even a Vitamix, but a juicer is the best way. You just cut the apples up into pieces. You don't peel them. You don't need to worry about the skins, the seeds, anything. Place them into the juicer, turn it on, and then what comes out the bottom is going to be apple juice, aka apple cider. Just needs to mature a little bit. So when that liquid comes out the bottom of the juicer, I collect it, I strain off any foam that's on top, and then I put it into, in my case, I use half-gallon glass canning jars that are sanitized. I put my canning filler, you know, the funnel on top, and then I will pour the juice through a strainer right into the jars and then refrigerate it. And after a few days, you'll notice the color gets considerably darker as it ages. That's just the oxidation process. It's totally natural. And this stuff is amazing, super delicious. It's much better if you use several varieties of apples. So some tart apples, some sweet apples. But I would definitely recommend giving this a try because your family will love homemade apple cider. Now do check out foodstoragefeast.com and learn how to cook amazing meals with simple store-bought foods like canned rice and beans and pasta and all that stuff. Take care, everyone. We'll see you next time.
You know what? Chef Snow will be one of those few people that's putting on weight in the apocalypse.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, dude.
He's gonna have preference in the apocalypse.
Man, I love this segment, man, because I love everything. First of all, we drink his coffee every day. That brown duck coffee is off the meat wagon. Your mom just got another shipment in.
Yeah.
No, she tried some other inferior brand, so she's going to have to go back to Chef Snow again. But yeah, apple season, y'all. Going right back to preparedness. What's the one thing that's kicking in the fall that is awesome for preparedness?
Apples.
Apples. This is part of why I love apples, and there are varieties out there. This is part of what I love so much about Old Southern Apples book from Lee Calhoun, is that before Sherman's March to the Sea, believe it or not, the South produced some pretty incredible apples. And because of what Sherman did, well, they're gone forever.
Yeah.
So what we now do in terms of preparedness, this is what the slaves would do. They'd take these apples for drying, cider, whatever the case may be. They put them on the tin roof. And, you know, so it was something they could eat for a long, long time. There are other varieties like Arkansas Black. Look, it's not my favorite tasting apple. I grow it for preparedness. There's other things like an Evercrisp. Got these growing out here too. I bought the license on that thing. I got those growing out here too.
Yeah. Yeah, those are your favorite tasting apple,
without a doubt. But they keep for a very, very, very long time. Huh. You can put them in your root cellar. I mean, you store these bad boys right, they could be ripe. I mean, they could still be ready to eat by next season.
Which is exactly how the apples go at the grocery store. You're not eating this year's apples. You're eating like last year's apples.
Yeah, and they're awful because they don't have any character. They don't have any flavor. But right now is that good time, y'all, to go get some of those apples, do what Chef Snow said. I can't wait to give that a shot. Because it's about time for me to go get some of my own. Ours, I just ate one of the apples off the tree today. That thing was off the hook.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
I don't even know what variety it was.
Well, it was supposed to be an Arkansas Black. No, but that wasn't an Arkansas Black.
Yeah. Somebody mislabeled that bad boy. It was like a kaleidoscope of colors on this thing.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was, but it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, excellent, excellent apple. So y'all be thinking about that stuff out there. Once again, preparedness. I mean, apples. Okay, can you grow apples? Grow some Arkansas Blacks. Grow some others that have a long, long, long shelf life. In fact, try to eat an Arkansas Black right off the tree. It ain't good.
No.
Stick that sucker in storage for about 3 or 4 months, then try it. Totally different flavor. Try it 6 months later, totally different flavor, and it improves with age. So there are those varieties out there, y'all. Be thinking about things like that. All right, so before I forget, y'all, if you need a Harvest Right freeze dryer, check it out down below. Now on to the Q&As. What do we got, son?
The first one I got from the Fountain app from Nitro Soil. The enemy is the state. They are lying to us. Keep spreading the good word, Billy and William. Ben Franklin's quote, three can keep a secret if two of them are dead. It's a total psyop. Governments constantly lie and propagandize their own citizens, with our own U.S. being one of the worst. I think Goebbels told more of the truth. If you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come in to believe the lie.
I could not have said it better. And you know, this whole thing, I'm so glad they pointed that part out, where they say, well, nobody can keep a secret in government. Oh, is that right? Well, there's still a lid on the Kennedy assassination. How about the Manhattan Project? A quarter of a million people were responsible for it as it was going. A quarter of a million. Not a word of it leaked out until the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Nobody saw it coming. So this idiotic nonsense saying the government can't keep a secret, everybody keeps saying it, but we have proof after proof, and I'm just giving you the Cliff Notes version.
I don't think it's that. I don't think it's the government. I don't think the government can keep a secret to an extent, but they also are aware that you can be told the truth 10 times and you won't believe it.
Yes.
So, like, what's the point in keeping it that much of a secret?
Well, no amount of evidence can shatter a faith consciously based on a lie. So that's exactly how this all goes.
Could you imagine being told, like, somebody telling you about nuclear bombs before they existed? You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, That's my point. Is like they could have told everybody and everybody would have been like, yeah, right.
Well, they did slick things like Atom Man, these comic books and stuff that they had. They removed all this stuff from the shelf. Nobody really got wise to it. But a quarter of a million people worked on the Manhattan Project. In fact, my great uncle actually invented the bomb bay doors that dropped the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Hmm. He was a famous inventor. I should tell that story about him sometime. Yeah, it was Great Uncle Chester. Yeah, what a name. An incredible, I mean, crazy story too, man. He was married. Maybe I'll just go ahead. We got time. I'll go ahead and tell that story real quick. He was apparently married to a woman. She was blind, but by everybody's account, she was just breathtakingly gorgeous. And she had this really bad habit of hanging onto a door handle whenever he drove. The motion of the car and everything just didn't work out well for him. I mean, this guy was on Time Magazine the whole nine yards. Mm. And somehow or another, they're driving down the road, going fast. Somehow she snatched a hold of that door handle, flew out of the car, died.
Oh, wow.
And then for the rest of his life, here's a little creepy stuff that went on. For the rest of his life, I mean, he was just in mourning. And I guess when he finally passed away, the way the story was is they were all at my grandmother's house. She had a pretty big house at the time. And he had this guitar that he played. And it was always in this chair that nobody else sat in. The guitar was there, and the way it was told to me was everybody was in that room, and then a sudden hush came over everybody. And then all of a sudden, apparently nobody was even in his death, everybody knew don't touch that guitar. Mm. And a sudden hush came over everybody, and a chord was played all by itself on that guitar. Mm. Man, you want to see all these pachyderms running out of that room on my side of the family, bro. They about killed each other getting up. You should see my Uncle Arnold, man, trying to get up out of that door. Apparently they were, the kids right there, man.
Just to further the humor in this, was this the black side of your family the white side of your family?
Oh, yeah, man. Hey.
Because the reactions are totally different.
Yeah. You let something happen around white people and be like, oh, shucks.
Yeah.
How about that? How did that happen? Man, you let some creepy stuff like that happen in a black neighborhood. Dude, it's about to get somebody's going to die just from the stampede collateral that's going to happen. Yeah, this is why horror movies don't happen in black neighborhoods, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't. They can't even, you can't even make it true to life because, trust me, ain't nobody in the hood going out there looking when they hear Freaky Jason outside the door.
No, every time they try to do a black horror movie, it turns into a comedy.
Yeah, yeah, it does. Like,
what's that one, Leprechaun?
Oh, man, I saw that one years ago, and I'm laughing my butt off. Yeah, because it had to happen in the hood. All right, Yvonne says, can't go through all of it, but basically, she's sending, a lot of people have sent me information regarding this whole thing that's happened in the Middle East. Mm. And they're calling BS on a lot of this stuff because they're looking at the sources. They're looking at things. Look, they had this one thing where they're parading this body. They're holding it on a, I don't know. They got it. Basically, they're walking this body through the street. Sirens go off. And then the guy that was on, they put him down. And then he gets up off the slab and then runs away himself. So the guy that was supposedly dead. Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, thanks, Yvonne. There's a lot of other people talking about this stuff, too.
Got one from Dan Del Coyo. If anyone wants to do a deep dive on OKC, Scott Horton of the Libertarian Institute has done many interviews over the years about OKC and Waco, another tragedy. The Libertarian Institute has also an OKC archive on their site and see all the source material. News articles, FBI, ATF, etc. Documents, trial transcripts, docs obtained through FOIA requests, etc. When you really look at any evidence, you can easily see that there's more to the official story, but only if you have an open mind.
Okay, check this out. I thought about this on the way.
Well, he has a part. It's an attachment to that. When this documentary came out, I watched it and was blown away. I burned DVD copies of the movie and was handing them to people I knew. To Mr. Emery, thank you for your service.
Yeah, we're going to try to get him on for part two and part three, folks. 9/11 and OKC, there's a lot of overlap in that. You wouldn't believe. And there's a lot of other things we didn't even cover. So if you want to see part two and part three, let me know. Because he's made the offer to go ahead because he's really passionate about getting this stuff out. You know, I was also thinking, everybody's saying, well, I remember the Hannitys and, the filth like him regarding 9/11. Well, where are the whistleblowers? Somebody would have said something. Well, they did say something, and they do. They wind up murdered, or they get marginalized, or, you know, they'll get them on the show and they'll put them up against a break or whatever. So they barely get the word out there. They're out there. But honestly, I don't even know why anybody would even consider being a whistleblower. Yeah. Think about it. So what happens to you? You either get murdered or you wind up like Bill Binney, Kirk Wiebe, some of these guys, you know, I guess to a certain extent you could say, okay, are some of these guys limited hangouts like Snowden? Snowden wound up with a good deal, if you ask me. He's over there in Russia.
Yeah.
You know, he probably knew what he was doing there. And then you have other people, Julian Assange. I mean, the second he talked about this, quote, magic dust, that's when they snatched him up and he's never seen the light of day.
Yeah.
So all these whistleblowers, what do they get for it? It's like the American public just doubles down on stupid anyway. So I don't know why anybody would want to put their lives and, you know, put their junk in a vice anyway. All right, so Zach says he basically sent out some Blue Oyster and Lion's Manes to the P.O. box. Thank you so much, my man. But he sent a picture of Comfrey shielding a first-year pawpaw from Creeping Charlie. And basically decides where he has the Comfrey on it.
Yeah.
Charlie ain't getting through. Yeah, it sounds like we're in Vietnam right now. Soaking cardboard and sheep mulch for the compost extract. And then his permaculture order. He sent some really awesome videos of all this different stuff. That's just one of them.
Oh, wow.
You can't see the rest of it right now, but...
That's cool.
Yeah, keep that Creeping Charlie at bay. Sounds like a freakazoid anyway.
Got one from TLR Inc. Got this from the YouTube channel, so check us out there. Wow, I've never dug into this, even though I've heard some things. This was really interesting, talking about the Oklahoma City. And I read that one specifically because it was surprising to see how many people were unaware of the Oklahoma City. Like, there's a few comments on the YouTube video talking about how they've heard a few things but never really looked into it or never really knew much about it.
Yeah, when you examine even more of it, I mean, people like Terrence Yakey, okay, talking about the whistleblowers.
Yeah.
He was probably going to be a whistleblower. He would not lie. Murdered him in cold blood. Nothing ever happened. I mean, he died for absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And because no matter how much evidence, people like Gary Webb, what do? They marginalize you, and the American people don't care anyway. But, you know, I'm so thankful for these brave, intrepid people that go out there and become whistleblowers. But when you get down to brass tacks, when you look at all this stuff, really, when you get down to it, the American public does not care.
No.
I don't. There is really no lie they cannot be made to believe.
Yeah.
I really believe that at this point. So, Andrew, since this, wow, this is really cool. I have to look into it. He says, Billy, have you heard of a Wurtz pumps? Saw them on YouTube. The guy redirected water from his river up 8 meters to a craggy, boggy area for crops. If I look at it, it kind of looks like an Archimedes screw to a certain extent. I might know a little bit about it, but I'd really like to check into it a little bit more. So thank you for that resource.
Mm. Got one from H. Sinclair on the YouTube channel. Hey, good day. I love you guys. You keep saying the moon landing was faked. Can you point me to any evidence supporting this? I've looked and never found any myself. Please enlighten me. Thanks.
Okay, well, okay. I could give you a long list of times, but we're coming to the end here. Let me just tell you to do this. Go to the Smithsonian in D.C. Go to the Air and Space Museum. Go over there and look at that capsule that they told you they had three grown men in. I want you to go look at the door, first of all, on that. I want you to look at that capsule. And then I want you to go over there and look at this thing that landed on the moon.
Yeah.
I want you to look and tell me if a grown man with a backpack can get out of that door.
No, just walk up to it as close as you can, kind of line yourself up and see if you would fit, and then see if two more people would fit. Yeah.
With nothing
without
on.
The suit on.
Yeah. Go up there, just go look at this stuff. Look at the rivets on the outside of this thing. Are you going to tell me that thing rolled into the atmosphere?
Is there any place he could go to find, like, information that he can dive into?
Yeah, I mean, it's out there, man. Good night. There's so much information regarding that. Nothing's jumping out of me right now because I wasn't really prepared for that. But trust me, there is so much evidence out there. Look at all the video on the moon. And then we're told now that all that footage has just disappeared, kind of like the Oklahoma City bombing footage.
Yeah.
It's all gone. It just disappeared. NASA doesn't know where it went.
All the information about how the moon landing was faked? Flat earthers. Okay. Go hit them up.
Yeah, go check that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, the information, I mean, it's ubiquitous out there. You can definitely find it.
Yep.
You
want me to go?
Yeah, go ahead.
Got one from IG Dolls 1. These were all things I wondered about, but never found answers until now. I would love for you to maybe do some podcasts of some of the truths about the events you have hinted at, especially considering how the outside world seems to be cascading out of control. I've been hearing a lot of info about what really happened going clear back to the Civil War. All of that info that has been squashed, maybe, by the media and the public education system.
Yeah, I'll have to do that. I'm hoping to save some of that stuff for the winter when I got a little more time to be able to put something like that together. Now, I could do it off the top of my head, and I do, and the information I provide is right, but I would love to go into greater detail regarding like that old saying, all wars are bankers' wars. They really are. Fact, read the book, War's a Racket, by two-time Medal of Honor winner, Smedley Darlington Butler. Won the Medal of Honor twice. He would have been the only human in history to win it a third time, but he turned it down. There's only been 9 people who have been awarded a Medal of Honor twice. He won it twice and lived to tell about it, and like I said, could have won it a third. By all rights, would have been the most decorated human in American warfare. His book, War's a Racket, he tells you in there how all wars are bankers' wars. In fact, the opening line of the book, I want to go through that. I really do want to go through. In fact, Joel Salatin and I had a really good discussion regarding the Civil War and regarding the things you think you know about the Civil War because you've been lied to your whole life. So have I. When you go out there and examine this stuff for yourself, every single bit of this stuff was for bankers to make more money. And it's happening that same way right now. So maybe I really do need to do a podcast. The thing is, I'm a little afraid of going too far afield because it is the Permaculture Pimpcast, but I have all these other interests, folks. If you think I ought to do it, maybe reach out because...
Yeah, Dad, they've been saying to do it. People have been losing their minds over it.
Well, it's certain segments of our listenership. I mean, maybe that's a Wednesday program I'll do, but Wednesday programs I'm kind of keeping like for...
Interviews.
Well, not only interviews, but it can be things that are outside the normal box.
Okay.
And so I'm thinking about doing that a little bit more regarding some of the topics here because I know this stuff inside and out. It's just not permaculture related, a lot of it, but it is survival related.
Yeah.
Because if you know this information, you know the tactics. This is why I'm saying if I didn't have a good understanding of certain of occulted history, okay, meaning hidden, I wouldn't have known when they say we're taking babies or they're taking babies and putting them in an auction block like they're doing right now. Automatically in my mind, I'm thinking, ding, 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 ding. Oh, reminds me of Saddam Hussein in the first Gulf War. Ding, 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 ding. Oh, World War I. You know, the Huns and all these different. And then ding, 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 ding. Go even further back. They were doing exactly the same stuff. Not in the Civil War, but in wars, I mean, prior to that. So they're knocking the dust off of old tactics because they know that we don't know our history.
Well, I remember watching this one history channel on YouTube or something like that. They were talking about Vlad the Impaler and how they had basically kind of done the same thing with him, making him sound like he was this super evil, not saying he wasn't evil, but he was this just total barbarian. Like he was just decapitating people and like drinking their blood and stuff like that.
Well, there's probably some truth to that, but you know who's related to him? The royal family.
Yeah.
King Charles, Prince Charles, King Charles, Chucky, whatever, Chucky doll, I don't care.
But the information was used as if it was like justification to eradicate him. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's what we always find out. Not always, but a lot of times the people they say were just awful, diabolical, a lot of times they are.
Gaddafi.
Yeah.
That was one.
Yeah. Well, don't get me started. That's some history you ought to know. That's modern history, folks, that you haven't been told about regarding that whole thing with Gaddafi.
Yeah.
Everything you were told about Libya was an absolute lie. It was the jewel of North Africa. You know what happened? He hit that water down below, and he was giving it to sub-Saharan Africa.
Mm.
Not only that, I mean, folks, I'll have to save that for it. Man, I swear I could do an hour monologue on just what happened in Libya. But I'll save it for some other time. I'll have to, y'all. We got Angela saying, asking about comfrey crowns. We don't have any crowns for sale right now. Not sure. We're getting to the shady point of comfrey season. You can still plant that stuff as long as you're able to work the soil. It's not going to come up immediately, but you can get it in the ground. And it's one of those preparedness tools that we sell. And she was also saying we had problems with the website. Well, we got a new website, and it should be working la-di-da-di, everybody, already for everybody else out there to go get whatever you need.
Got one from Old McDonald Homestead. This was a good one, and he's talking about the one you did with the Farm Connection, the episode with them. This was a good one. I haven't made up my mind on the shape of the Earth, but I do strongly believe that the Earth is at the center of all the celestial bodies, as the stars do not change in relationship to one another from our perspective here on Earth. Hashtag moon landing was faked. Hashtag NASA are liars. Also looking forward to see what this guy has to offer for fruit trees or some fall planting.
Yeah, they definitely have stuff that nobody else has, and it was cool to strike up a friendship with them. Like I said, like the volcanic rock dust, nobody else around here has that for some reason. Yeah. They had it. There's a lot of other things they have, too. And regarding, look, y'all, I'm not saying believe me. I'm saying examine it. Because even your teachers, they were misinformed. They were taught this stuff. And frankly, they were willing to be spoon-fed lies without ever asking a critical question about anything. So this is the paradigm in which we're coming, y'all. We're all started at Plato's Cave, especially if you've gone through the typical education system. We're all in the same boat, and it's a matter you can get yourself out of it, but you're going to have to, like the Bible says, study to show thyself approved. Now, that's regarding the Bible, but I'm saying it can also apply regarding other matters. Study these things. Look into it for yourself. Don't believe any experts. Just ask yourself common sense questions about the things you've been told. And how it might actually be. Yeah. All right, y'all. What do you got?
Oh, I got one more. Samantha Rickerson on the YouTube channel. Yeah, California is a very large state. His description of it being politically manipulated is spot on. Really, that is what's happening nationwide, county by county. This is why focusing on local politics is the most important thing you can do to make a difference. And that was talking about Porterhouse.
No, I totally agree. I would first start at your house. Try to get that as squared away as you can. Then work from there out, just like you do just like when you design a property. You start at the most local place and then work your way out. So start at your house, see what relationships you can make there, and then maybe your neighbors. Then maybe you start a group, then a county. I was in there dropping off something the other day at a FedEx place, and I ran into the guy, and I got his card still, and he was telling me about how he started up his own little group. He didn't realize anybody would ever come, and I'm thinking about kind of doing the same thing here. Not quite sure how to make that happen, because there's also, in preparedness circles, you don't want to just have anybody come to your house.
Right.
You want to do it in neutral ground. You want to meet at a park. You want to do it in a place where everybody's kind of on even ground, you know, where not one person. And then you kind of have this dating moment. Okay, do I want to know this person a little bit better? You know, and then maybe you go out to eat together. And then later on, maybe you do something else together. And then with the benefit of hindsight, you may realize it was all a mistake, but you'll never know unless you get out there and look. All right, y'all. Hopefully this was all a blessing to you. Have a good weekend. Until next time, stay alert.
Stay alive. Like a cell, they want to spin up, but the center of the nexus, man.